Bulwer smiled thinly, a brief, self-satisfied smile.
"How can you be so sure?" Perrin said slowly.
"As I said, my lord, I keep my ears open. The Prophet reportedly closed a number of inns and taverns and tore down those he considered too disreputable. Several were mentioned, and by chance I happen to know there are inns of those names in Abila. I think there is little chance another town would have inns with the same names."
He flashed another narrow smile. He certainly smelled pleased with himself. Perrin scratched his beard thoughtfully.
"The man just happened to remember where some inns that Massima supposedly had torn down were located. And if Massima turned out not to be there after all, well, these days rumors sprouted like mushrooms after rain."
Bulwer sounded a man trying to build up his own importance.
"Thank you, Master Bulwer. I'll keep that to mind. If you hear any more, be sure to tell me."
As he turned to go, the man caught his sleeve.
Bulwer's skinny fingers leaped away immediately, as though burned, and he made one of those bird-like bows, dry-washing his hands.
"Forgive me, my lord. I hesitate to press, but do not take the white cloaks too lightly. Avoiding them is wise, but it may not be possible. They are much closer than the Shonchan. Imenvalda, the new Lord Captain Commander, led most of their numbers toward northern Amadisia before Amador fell. He was hunting the Prophet also, my lord. Valda is a dangerous man, and Radam Asunawa, the Grand Inquisitor, makes Valda seem pleasant. And I fear neither has any love for your own lord. Forgive me."
He bowed again, hesitated, then went on smoothly.
"If I may say so, my lord's display of Manetherin's banner is inspired. My lord will be more than a match for Valda and Asunawa if he takes care."
Watching him bow himself away, Perrin thought he knew part of Bulwer's story now. Clearly he also had run afoul of the White Cloaks. That could take no more than being on the same street with them, a frown at the wrong time, but it seemed Bulwer had a grudge. A sharp mind, too, seeing right away about the Red Eagle. And a sharp tongue with Master Gil. Gil was on his knees beside Megden, talking rapidly despite Linny's effort to hush him. Megden had turned to stare after Bulwer as the fellow hurried through the trees toward the carts. But now and then her gaze swung to Perrin. The rest of them clustered close to her, peering now at Bulwer, now at Perrin. If he had ever seen a group of people worried about what somebody else had said, it was they. But what were they worried he might have heard? Backbiting, probably. Tales of resentments and misdeeds, real or imagined. People cooped up together tended to start pecking at one another. If that was it, maybe he could put a stop before somebody drew blood. Talonvor was fondling his sword hilt again. What did Fael intend to do with the fellow?
"Aram, I want to go talk to Talonvor and that lot. Tell them what Bulwer said to me. Just slide it into the talk, but tell everything."
That should soothe fears of tale-bearing. Fael said servants needed to be made to feel at home.
"Make friends with them if you can, Aram. But if you decide to moon over one of the women, be sure it's Linny. The other two are taken."
The man had a smooth tongue for any pretty woman, but he managed to look surprised and offended both.
"As you wish, Lord Perrin," he muttered sulkily. "I'll catch you up quickly."
"I will be over with the Aiel."
Aram blinked.
"Ah, yes. Well, it might take a while at that if I'm to make friends with them. They don't look like they much want friends to me."
This from a fellow who stared suspiciously at anyone except Fael, who came near Perrin, and never smiled for anyone not wearing a skirt. Nevertheless, he went over and squatted on his heels where he could speak to Gil and the others. Even from a distance, their standoffishness was plain. They continued with their work, only now and then saying a word to Aram, and they looked at each other as often as at him.
"Skittish as green quail in summer, when the foxes were teaching the cubs to hunt. But at least they were talking."
Perrin wondered what mischief Aram had gotten up to with the Aiel. There did not seem to have been any time for it.
But he did not wonder long. Any serious trouble with Aiel usually meant someone dead and not the Aiel. In truth, he was not so eager to meet the Wise Ones himself. He walked around the curve of the hill, but instead of climbing the slope, his feet carried him all the way to the Mayenners. He had stayed away from their camp as much as possible, too, and not simply because of Berylane. There were disadvantages to having too keen a nose. Fortunately, a freshening breeze was carrying most of the stink away, though it did little for the heat. Sweat rolled down the faces of the mounted sentries in their red armor. At the sight of him, they sat up even more rigidly in their saddles, which was saying something. Where the Two Rivers men rode like fellows heading out to the fields, the Mayenners usually were statues on horseback. They could fight, though. The light said there was no need. Javi and Norella came running, buttoning up his coat before Perrin was well past the sentries. The dozen or so other officers followed at Norella's heels, all coated and some fastening the straps of their red breastplates. Two or three carried helmets with thin red plumes tucked under their arms. Most were years older than Norella, some twice his age, graying men with hard, scarred faces. But Norella's reward for helping to rescue Rand had been to be named Gallien's second, his first lieutenant, they called it. "The first hasn't returned yet, Lord Perrin," Norella said, making a bow mirrored by the others. A tall, slender man, he did not look as young as he had before Dumai's Wells. There was an edge to his eyes, which had seen more blood than most veterans of 20 battles. But if his face was harder, there was still an eagerness to please in his scent. To Javi and Norella, Perrin Ibarra was a man who could fly or walk on water as he chose. "The morning patrols saw nothing. Those that are back. I would have reported otherwise."
"Of course," Perrin told him. "I just wanted to look about a bit."
He simply meant to walk around until he could work up his nerve to face the Wise Ones, but the young Mayenner followed him with the rest of the officers, anxiously watching for Lord Perrin to find some flaw in the winged guards, wincing whenever they came on bare-chested men tossing dice on a blanket, or some fellow snoring away with the sun on the climb. He need not have bothered. To Perrin, the camp looked laid out with a plumb line and level. Each man had his blankets and his saddle for a pillow not more than 2 paces from where his horse was tied to one of the long ropes drooping between chest-high poles, set upright in the ground. A cook fire stood every 20 paces, with lances stacked in steel-tipped cones between. The whole made a sort of box around 5 peaked tents, one striped golden blue and larger than the other 4 combined. All very different from the Two Rivers men's every-which-way arrangement. Perrin walked along briskly, trying not to look too much a fool. He was not sure how much success he was having. He itched to stop and look over a horse or two, just to be able to pick up a hoof without somebody practically fainting. But mindful of what Aram had said, he kept his hands to himself. Everyone seemed as startled as Norella at his pace. Tough-eyed bannermen chivied men to their feet, only to have Perrin stride by with a nod before they were all upright. A puzzled murmur trailed in the air behind him, and his ears caught a few comments about officers, lords in particular, that he was just as glad Norella and the others missed. Finally he found himself on the verge of the camp, staring up the brushy slope toward the Wise Ones' tents. Only a few of the maidens were visible among the scattered trees up there, and some of the Gaishain.
"Lord Perrin," Norella said hesitantly, "the Aes Sedai..."
He stepped closer and lowered his voice to a hoarse whisper.
"I know they swore to the Lord Dragon, and I've seen things, Lord Perrin. They do camp chores. I said I. This morning Masuri and Seonid came down to fetch water. And yesterday, after you returned, yesterday I thought I heard someone up there crying out. It couldn't have been one of the sisters, of course," he added hurriedly, and laughed to show how ridiculous the idea was, a very shaky laugh. You will see that everything is all right with them?"
He had ridden into 40,000 Shido leading 200 lancers, but talking about this had him hunching his shoulders and shifting his feet. Of course, he had ridden into 40,000 Shido because an Aes Sedai wanted him to.
"I'll do what I can," Perrin muttered. Maybe matters were worse than he had thought.
Now he had to stop them getting worse still, if he could. He would rather have faced the Shido again. Norella nodded as though Perrin had promised all he had asked and more.
"That is well, then," he said, sounding relieved.
Casting sideways glances at Perrin, he worked himself up to say something else, but apparently this was not so touchy as the Aes Sedai.
"I heard that you let the Red Eagle stay."
Perrin very nearly jumped. Even for just around the hill, news had traveled fast.
"It seemed the thing to do," he said slowly.
Berylaine would have to know the truth, yet if too many knew, that truth would spread from the next village they passed, the next farm.
"This used to be part of Manetherin," he added, as if Norella did not know that perfectly well.
Truth.
He had gotten so he could bend truth like an Aes Sedai, and to men on his side. "Not the first time that flag's been raised around here, I'll warrant. But none of those fellows had the dragon reborn behind him." And if that did not set the necessary seeds, he did not know how to plow a furrow. Abruptly he realized that what seemed every last one of the winged guards was watching him with their officers, no doubt wondering what he was saying, after all but running through that way. Even the lean, balding old soldier Garien called his dog-robber had come out to stare, and Berylaine's maids, a pair of plump, plain-faced women, garbed to match their mistress's tent. Perrin had hardly seen a thing, but he knew he had to give some sort of praise. Raising his voice enough to carry, he said,
"The winged guards will Dumaen proud if we ever face another Dumai's Wells."
Those were the first words that came to mind, but he winced at saying them. To his shock, shouting rose straight away among the soldiers, cheering, "Perrin Golden Eyes," and "Mayen for Golden Eyes," and "Golden Eyes and Manetherin." Men danced and capered, and some snatched lances from the stacks to shake them so the red streamers waved in the breeze. Grizzled bannermen watched them with arms folded, nodding approval. Norella beamed, and not only him. Officers with gray in their hair and scars on their faces grinned like boys praised at their lessons. Light, he was the only sane man left. He prayed never to see another battle. Wondering whether this was going to cause trouble with Berylaine, he made his goodbyes with Norella and the others, and tramped up the slope through dead or dying brush, none of it waist high. Brown weeds crackled beneath his boots. Shouting still filled the Mayenner camp. Even after she learned the truth, the First might not be pleased to have her soldiers cheering him this way. Of course, that could have good points. Maybe she would be angry enough to stop pestering him. Short of the crest, he paused, listening to the cheers finally fade away. No one was going to cheer him here. All of the side flaps were down on the Wise One's low gray-brown tents, closing them in. Only a few of the maidens were in sight now. Squatting easily on their heels beneath a leather leaf that still showed some green, they eyed him curiously. Their hands moved quickly in that way they had of talking among themselves with signs. After a moment, Sulan rose, shifting her heavy belt knife, and strode in his direction, a tall, wiry woman with a pink scar across her sun-dark cheek. She glanced back down the way he had come and seemed relieved that he was alone, though it was often hard to tell with Aiel.
"That is good, Perrin Ebarra," she said quietly. "The Wise Ones have not been pleased that you make them come to you. Only a fool displeases Wise Ones, and I have not taken you for a fool."
Perrin scrubbed at his beard. He had been keeping clear of the Wise Ones and the Aes Sedai as much as possible, but he had had no intention of forcing them to come to him. He just found their company uncomfortable, to put it mildly.
"Well, I need to see Adara now," he told her, "about the Aes Sedai."
"Perhaps I was mistaken after all," Sulan said dryly. "But I will tell her."
Turning, she paused.
"Tell me something. Terrell Winter and Furin Alhara are close to Siona Dryhan, like first brothers with a first sister. She does not like men as men, yet they offer to take her punishment for her. How could they shame her so?"
He opened his mouth, but nothing came out. A pair of Gaishin appeared from the reverse slope, each leading two of the Aiel's pack mules. The white-robed men passed within a few paces, heading down toward the stream. He could not be sure, but he thought both were Shido. The pair kept their eyes meekly down, barely looking up enough to see where they were going. They had had every opportunity to run away, doing chores like that without anyone to watch. A peculiar people.
"I see you are shocked, too," Sulin said. "I had hoped you could explain. I will tell Adara."
As she started for the tents, she added over her shoulder,
"You wetlanders are very strange, Perrin Ebarra."
Perrin frowned after her, and when she vanished into one of the tents, he turned to frown at the two Guy Shine leading the horses to water.
Wetlanders were strange? Light.
Cinderella had been right in what he heard. It was beyond time to stick his nose into what was going on between the Wise Ones and the Aes Sedai. He should have before this. He wished he did not think it would be the same as sticking his nose into a hornet's nest. It seemed to take a long time for Sulin to reappear, and she did little to help his mood when she did. Holding the tent flap for him, she flicked his belt knife contemptuously with a finger as he ducked through.
"You should be better armed for this dance, Perrin Ebarra," she said.
Inside, he was surprised to find all six Wise Ones sitting cross-legged on colorful tasseled cushions, their shawls tied around their waists and their skirts making carefully arranged fans across the layered rugs. He had hoped for just Adara. None looked to be more than 4 or 5 years older than he, some no older at all, yet somehow they always made him feel as if he were facing the oldest members of the women's circle, the ones who had spent years learning to sniff out whatever you wanted to hide. Separating one woman's scent from another's was all but impossible, but he hardly needed to. Six sets of eyes latched onto him, from Janina's pale sky blue to Marlene's purple twilight, not to mention Navarin's sharp green. Every eye could have been a skewer. Adara brusquely motioned him to take a cushion himself, which he did with gratitude, though it put him facing them all in a semicircle. Maybe Wise Ones had designed these tents to make men bend their necks if they wanted to stand upright. Strangely, it was cooler in the dim interior, but he still felt like sweating. Maybe he could not pick one from another, yet these women smelled like wolves studying a tethered goat. A square-faced Guy Shine, who was half again as big as he was, knelt to offer a golden cup of dark wine punch on an elaborate silver tray. The Wise Ones already had mismatched silver cups and goblets. Unsure what it meant that he was being offered gold, maybe nothing, yet who could say with Aiel, Perrin took it cautiously. It gave off the scent of plums. The fellow bowed meekly enough when Adara clapped her hands and bent himself out of the tent backward, but the half-healed slash down his hard face had to date from Demise Wells.
"Now that you are here," Adara said as soon as the tent flap dropped behind the Gashine, "we will explain again why you must kill the man called Massima Dagar."
"We should not have to explain again," Delora put in.
Her hair and eyes were nearly the same shade as Magden's, but no one would call her pinched face pretty. Her manner was pure ice.
"This Massima Dagar is a danger to the Karakhan. He must die."
"The Dreamwalkers have told us, Perrin Ebarra."
Corella certainly was pretty, and though her fiery hair and piercing eyes made her look as though she had a temper, she was always mild. For a Wise One. And certainly not soft.
"They have read the dream. The man must die."
Perrin took a swallow of plum punch to gain a moment. Somehow the punch was cool. It was always the same with them. Rand had not mentioned any warning from the Dreamwalkers. The first time Perrin had mentioned that, only the once, they had thought he was casting doubt on their word, and even Corella had gone hot-eyed. Not that Perrin thought they would lie. Not exactly. He had not caught them in one anyway. But what they wanted for the future, and what Rand wanted, what he himself wanted for that matter, might be very different things. Maybe it was Rand who was keeping secrets.
"If you could just give me some idea what this danger is," he said finally. "The Light knows Massima's a madman, but he supports Rand. A fine thing if I go around killing people on our side. That will certainly convince people to join Rand."
Sarcasm was lost on them. They looked at him, unblinking. "The man must die," Adara said at last. "It is enough that 3 dreamwalkers have said so, and 6 wise ones tell you."
"The same as always." Maybe they did not know any more than that, and maybe he should get on with why he had come. "I want to talk about Sionid and Masuri," he said, and 6 faces turned to Frost.
Like these women could stare down a stone.
Setting the wine cup beside him, he leaned toward them stubbornly. "I'm supposed to show people Aes Sedai sworn to Rand." He was supposed to show Massima, actually, but this did not seem a good time to mention that. "They aren't going to be very cooperative if you lot beat them. Light, they're Aes Sedai. Instead of making them haul water, why don't you learn from them? They must know all sorts of things you don't."
Too late, he bit his tongue. The Aiel women did not take offense, though. Not that it showed, anyway.
"They know some things we do not," Delora told him firmly, "and we know some they do not."
As firmly as a spear point in the ribs.
"We learn what there is to learn, Perrin Ebarra," Marlene said calmly, combing nearly black hair with her fingers. She was one of the few Aiel he had seen with such dark hair, and she often toyed with it. "And we teach what there is to teach."
"In any event," Janina said, "it is none of your affair. Men do not interfere between wise ones and apprentices."
She shook her head over his foolishness.
"You may stop listening outside and come in, Sionid Trigon," Adara said suddenly.
Perrin blinked in surprise, but none of the women batted an eye. There was a moment of silence, then the tent flap twitched aside, and Sionid ducked inside, kneeling quickly on the rugs. That vaunted Aes Sedai serenity was shattered in her. Her mouth was a thin line, her eyes tight, her face red. She smelled of anger, frustration, and a dozen more emotions, all whirling about so quickly that Perrin could barely separate any out.
"May I speak to him?" she asked in a stiff voice.
"If you take care what you say," Adara told her.
Sipping her wine, the wise one watched over the rim of her cup. A teacher watching a pupil? A hawk watching a mouse? Perrin could not be sure. Except that Adara was very sure of her place, whatever the pairing. So was Sionid. But that did not carry over to him. She twisted around to face him on her knees, back going straight, eyes heated. Anger raged in the smell of her.
"Whatever you know," she said angrily, "whatever you think you know, you will forget."
No, there was not a shred of serenity left in her.
"Whatever is between the wise ones and us is for us alone. You will stand aside, avert your eyes, and keep your mouth closed."
Amazed, Perrin raked his fingers through his hair.
"Light, you're upset because I know you got a switching?" he said incredulously.
Well, he would have been too, but not alongside the rest.
"Don't you know these women would as soon cut your throat as look at you? Slit your throat and leave you by the side of the road? Well, I promised myself I wouldn't let that happen. I don't like you, but I promised to protect you from the wise ones, or the Ashaman, or Rand himself. So come down off that high horse."
Realizing he was shouting, he drew a deep, embarrassed breath and settled back on his cushion, snatched up his wine cup, and took a long drink. Sionid went stiffer by the word with indignation, and her lip curled well before he finished.
"You promised?" she sneered. "You think Aes Sedai need your protection? You—"
"Enough," Adara said quietly, and Sionid's jaw snapped shut, though her hands made white-knuckled fists clutching her skirts.
"What makes you think we would kill her, Perrin Ebarra?" Janina asked curiously.
Aiel seldom showed much on their faces, but the others frowned at him, or looked with open incredulity.
"I know how you feel," he replied slowly. "I've known since I saw you with the sisters after Demise Wells."
He was not about to explain that he had smelled their hatred, their contempt, every time a wise one looked at an Aes Sedai back then. He did not smell it now, but no one could maintain that level of fury for long without bursting. That did not mean it was gone, only that it had sunk deep, maybe into the bone. Delora snorted, a sound like linen ripping.
"First you say they must be cuddled because you need them,
and now because they are Aes Sedai, and you have promised to protect them. Which is truth, Perrin Ebarra?
Both. Perrin met Delora's hard gaze for a long moment, then eyed each of the others in turn. Both are true, and I mean both. The wise ones exchanged glances, the sort where every flicker of an eyelid held 100 words and no man could make out a one. Finally, in a shifting of necklaces and readjusting of tied shawls, they appeared to reach agreement.
"We do not kill apprentices, Perrin Ebarra," Nevarran said. She sounded shocked at the idea. "When Randall Thor asked us to apprentice them, perhaps he thought it was just to make them obey us. But we do not speak empty words. They are apprentices now. They will remain so until 5 wise ones agree they are ready to be more," Marlene added, sweeping her long hair over her shoulder. "And they are treated no differently than any others."
Adara nodded over her wine cup.
"Tell him the advice you would give him concerning Massima Dagar, Sionid Trigon," she said.
The kneeling woman had practically writhed during Nevarran and Marlene's short speeches, gripping her skirt until Perrin thought the silk might rip, but she wasted no time complying with Adara's instructions.
"The wise ones are right, whatever their reasons. I do not say this because they wish it."
She drew herself up again, smoothing her features with a visible effort. A touch of heat still flared in her voice, though.
"I saw the work of so-called Dragon Sworn before I ever met Randall Thor. Death and destruction to no purpose. Even a faithful dog must be put down if he begins to foam at the mouth."
"Blood and ashes," Perrin grumbled. "How can I even let you in the sight of the man after that? You swore fealty to Rand. You know that isn't what he wants. What about that 'thousands will die if you fail'?"
Light, if Masuri felt the same, then he had to put up with Aes Sedai and Wise Ones for nothing. No worse. He would have to guard Massima from them.
"Masuri knows Massima for Rabbit as well as I," Sionid replied when he put the question to her.
All of her serenity had returned. She regarded him with a cool, unreadable face. Her scent was sharply alert, intent. As if he needed his nose, with her eyes fixed on his, big and dark and bottomless.
"I swore to serve the dragon reborn, and the best service I can give him now is to keep this animal from him. Bad enough that rulers know Massima supports him. Worse if they see him embrace the man. And thousands will die if you fail to get close enough to Massima to kill him."
Perrin thought his head would spin. Again an Aes Sedai whirled words about like a top, made it seem she had said black when she meant white.